Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, March 21st, and this is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. And this is Jeff Dunphy coming to you from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I apologize for my absence last week. I think we've had a bug flying around Calgary that has been quite a challenge. However, we're back in the saddle, and we're back here to share all that we have in changing the way you look at things, in retooling for our coming of age. Before we start today, I want to reiterate, as I am wont to do from time to time, how none of the stuff that is spoken about is new, and none of the stuff that is spoken about and shared with my listeners is mine. It is all yours. All of the stuff that we talk about, all of the food for thought that we put forward is done in order to facilitate a further understanding of what we might on occasion make mention of as the divine design, how everything unfolds, how everything falls into place as a plan, if you will. There is an intelligent design to this whole thing. And as our scientists get further and further away from their comfort zone, they do plug into a way and plug into a realization that this world in which we live in has an intelligent design. I'm going to start with an old Buddhist saying, that says, how is it that we participate in a fashion where we can see the world through eyes unclouded by longing? We talk about seeing things as they are and not as we want to see them, or even not as others want us to see them. This is one of the objectives of our offering in terms of retooling, being able to see the world through eyes unclouded by delusion, unclouded by longing, unclouded by Maya. The ancients speak of Maya as that which is a construct in on the mental level and in the astral level that hides the true or the truth behind what really is. Now we're going to go to the Delphi, the Oracle at Delphi that was brought to us and around us by Plato and also by Socrates. We're going to chat about the four questions that were posited, and then we're going to chat about the third Chinese patriarch of Zen. So the four questions that all pitch up every now and again, and oftentimes present themselves to us as parents, is when our child, old enough to think for themselves, but yet still young enough to glory in the wonder of it all, looks to us and says, Mom or Dad, who am I? Where do I come from? Why am I here? And where do I go from here? These questions are, as some would say, certainly the philosophers in us would say, are as old as mankind is itself. And while the old adage of where do I come from may fall back down to a conversation of the birds and the bees, that is not where those true esotericists pursue. Let's chat about perspective, and let's chat about those four questions a little, but I also want to chat about who we think we are, and I want to talk about channels. Now, the first, the Chinese patriarch of Zen was given me in the early 80s by a great teacher, a wise teacher, who's still around today. His name is Ram Dass, and he chatted about this, and the first statement in the third Chinese patriarch of Zen is, the great way is not difficult for those with no preferences. The great way is not difficult for those with no preferences. Doesn't make sense on one level yet. It makes infinite sense on another. How can we have no preferences? How can we be so indifferent, if you will? Well, Dwal Kool, in his writings with Alice Bailey, made a reference to something called divine indifference. And so when we visit or revisit this statement, the great way is not difficult for those with no preferences, and we reconcile it and marry it up with the declaration or the statement, divine indifference, we now may get a bit of insight into where they were going with this. Where they were going with this. Now, what does no preferences mean? Well, on a lower level, it means you don't care, you're indifferent, you're apathetic, perhaps. You could wander down that path. But let's chat a little about an indifference of a higher order. Let's chat a little about an indifference of how you see things, an indifference towards attachment to a certain perspective. And let's further that by the next statement in this, and that is, when love and hate are both absent, everything is clear and undisguised. But make the slightest distinction, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Buddha speaks in various ways on how our attachments create suffering. Some would say, as one of the masters that I work with, Master Chang, who is still around, Stephen Chang, he would say, oftentimes Buddha is misquoted as saying life is suffering, which I completely agree with, because not only is life not necessarily suffering, it is the attachment to things that causes the suffering that we see. And that is the reference that that Buddha was making, as opposed to life is suffering. Now, the old question of who am I comes into light of how do you identify yourself? Well, we identify ourselves now by showing our papers or our license or our passport or our special cards, which is interesting because they give legitimacy to a world right now that is fraught with a whole bunch of fear-mongering by the governments. So I want to talk a little about how we see things and through what eyes we see things, and go back into being able to see things through eyes unclouded by longing. So I want you to imagine there is a channel changer on the side of your head. And this channel changer has various channels on it. And the first channel that we will speak of is channel one. Now, this is a low channel, obviously. This is the channel that exists for everybody. And this is the channel that sees people and their shapes and their gender. This is something we would call the lust channel. And so we see tall people. We see short people, we see skinny people, we see fat people. We see men and women and boys and girls. We see their gender. We see oftentimes the sexualization of young women or young men for that matter in advertising. So the projection and the advertisers are wanting you to buy these wonderful jeans because they look great on this wonderfully beautiful young model. And consequently, they wish to inspire longing or lust for something. We also see that we are subjected to advertising that creates not so much desire for jeans, but desire for a conquest or a sexual outlet or a sexual avenue. And so consequently, we see young girls as young as 12 and 13 identifying themselves with their validity as people, attachment to their sexuality. This is more so done with young women than it is for young men. And it is desperately inappropriate and desperately contrary to who we really are. While we do have male and female sexes, our gender, as we evolve through time, becomes less and less relevant. And in all fairness, even if we are active sexual beings, the sexual activity that we participate in constitutes such a small part and portion of our time allocation throughout the time in a week, that everybody will agree that the enormous amount of emphasis that is put on one's sexuality is incredibly stilted. It's incredibly uneven. So now let's chat about channel one. So we look through our eyes on channel one and we see tall and short and skinny and fat. We see male and female. And we see, in keeping with the context of the lust channel, we see individuals as those people, those individuals that we can get something from. So in keeping with the sexual thing, you wander into a bar, the boy wanders into a bar, and he looks around and he sees all the beautiful women that he wants to hit on, or vice versa. The woman wanders into a bar and sees all the beautiful men that she is interested in chatting up. And so consequently, you look upon things and you classify them in three ways. A potential, a competitor, or irrelevant. For example, a young man walks into a bar and he sees several beautiful women. These are potentials. These are women where he would like to go and chat them up, have a cup of tea, or have some beverages, or have some aspect that suits what his desire is, his desire body, his astral body. He also sees a whole bunch of other men or boys in the bar who are potentially competitors. So they are vying with the same lustful approach. What is it? What's in it for me? The lustful approach. And they are approaching these women in the same way. And then he sees over in the corner, he sees a little old lady and a little old man who are in their 50s or 60s or 70s or whatever age, but they're completely irrelevant. So they don't even enter into his radar screen. So when it's in that avenue of channel one that many people reside, they only see individuals as those that can fulfill a fantasy of their own. And in fact, I suspect that we now have psychological disorders where people are addicted to sex, they're addicted to drugs, they're addicted to all kinds of things, so they go into rehab in order to extricate themselves from these addictions. And it is the thinking that if you have enough sexual partners, if you have enough drugs, if you have enough alcohol, if you have enough stimuli, that you will be happy. Au contraire, because, boy, we do guess and know and understand and have been witness to many times that too much of anything is an imbalance, and too much sex or lots and lots of sex or lots and lots of drugs does not make you happy. It's trying to fill a hunger that isn't fillable on the physical, because we are all hungry. And we are all hungry for those four questions. Who am I? Where do I come from? Why am I here? And where do I go from? Where do I go from here? So that's channel one. Channel one is, we call the lust channel. That channel one is the channel that you use and pursue something to fulfill a fantasy of your own. Now let's go to the side of our head and change our channel changer and talk about channel two. Now channel two isn't our physicality or our physiology, it is our roles. It is the hats that we wear. And the hats that we wear constitute many, many, many hats. So now it isn't so much male and female, it is masculine and feminine. It isn't so much a tall, blonde, blue-eyed boy or girl, it's now an individual who is a nurse, or an individual who is a lawyer, or an individual who is a policeman, or an individual who is a fireman, or an athlete, or any of the roles that we play. And these roles that we play are passed down to us via society and via our parents. You know, our parents always have aspirations for us to do seemingly whatever we want to do, but wouldn't it be nice if Johnny or Lisa became a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, a judge, Some even have aspirations for their children to become aristocrats, where to marry, how to marry, who to plug into. And so Channel 2 is the role channel, the hats that you wear. And we would call this, in terms of conventional psychology or even historic psychology, because I think the Minnesota multiphasic personality reference that we use in this regard is somewhat old, but it is the roles that we play. So it even is sister, brother, mother, father, grandparent, grandchild, child. So when we are on this channel, on channel two, we play the role. And sometimes the role plays us. Let's chat a little about the role playing us. And that would be a couple of examples to further illustrate. So the first example is the police officer who, in the normal course of his duties, is handing out speeding tickets. Now, I, for one, have had, on more than one occasion, a speeding ticket. And sometimes these police officers take themselves, or it seems, they take themselves far too seriously. And consequently, their predisposition towards the whole thing is as if you have just wandered into a village and created heinous acts of savagery in this village when in fact you were exceeding the speed limit by a 10 or 12 or 15 kilometers per hour. And so consequently, they treat you as if you have just done something absolutely horrific. And so consequently, their incapacity to see things as they are and not see things through their role as a police officer oftentimes gets in the way. And if we are there listening to them rant and rave about how it's dangerous and how it's this and how it's that, there is a part of us, mind you, the mindfulness of us doesn't let this part out, but there's a part of us that want to say to a police officer giving us a ticket, dude, lighten up. It's just a speeding ticket. I was just going a few miles an hour over the speed limit. Give me the ticket and let me get on my way. And in fact, some would view the ticketing of vehicles in no small part, it's promoting safety, and I don't disagree with that. However, I do and have on more than one occasion see it as a form of taxation where the municipality or the province or the government can gain taxes, can gain revenue by ticketing the citizenry. That's a perspective. So consequently, there is a police officer taking himself too seriously. And we would call that, or we would see that, or we would play that hand by saying, he isn't so much wearing the role of police officer. The role is wearing him. So he is so caught up in the role of the police officer that he can't see himself as something other than that role of police officer. So that's a question that we beg of ourselves when we say, are we wearing the role? Or is in fact the role wearing us? Are we so caught up in the role of whoever we are at that moment that we are unaware that there's something more to it than just the role? Now let's chat a little about parents, because we all have parents, and the role of children. So we, at a certain point in time, depending on how old we are and how things unfold in our lives, we all have a place where we have a parent and a child, and the role that they play is a very important role, and it's one that needs to evolve. And I'm not sure when we go through this, but it's sometime between the time of when we are called to act as an adult, so it could be as early as in the early teens, and it could be into our late 20s or even early 30s for some, where you now start to see your parents not so much just as parents, but as people as well. And oftentimes this is caused by trauma. This is caused by calamity in an event where your children or yourself view your parent or your children as something other than just your parent or child. So this happens with parents when all of a sudden your children, your other parents come along and they say, you know, little Johnny is absolutely delightful and polite and kind and gracious when he's over at our house. And they say to you, my goodness, how wonderful it is that little Johnny is so pleasant. And you go, oh my goodness gracious, little Johnny has a life outside of being my child, and little Johnny has a life that clearly he is impressing upon people that he is polite and kind and gracious outside of the house. So that as a parent, you see, ah, he lives and exists outside of just being my child. And the same thing goes for parents. When certainly when some of us have lost a parent, there is an aspect of how we view the other parent as, oh my, I guess now mom or dad, the one who hasn't departed, I haven't seen them like this before. It never occurred to me that they weren't just my mom. And this is part of us viewing them as the role they play and identifying them with just the role they play. And so consequently, you have your conversation with your parents, and there's a place, 16, 18, 21, 25, 30, where you see your parents as people as well as just your parents. It's an interesting perspective, and that is the role they play for you. And consequently, as we become more and more aware, and as we plug into our awareness, and as we retool, we start to understand where it is that we plug into the wisdom that is beyond our roles. It's beyond the roles we play. So channel two is the role that we are playing. And the question to ever keep in mind is how is it that we stand and play the role but never forget that we are playing the role? We're putting the hat on of daughter. But then all of a sudden we are mother. And then all of a sudden we are sister. And then all of a sudden we are granddaughter. That's all inside the family. But then we play the role of the nurse or the doctor or the lawyer or the accountant or the physiologist, depends what it is. We play those roles. And so we have those roles that we play, and we play them to the best of our ability, but we mindfully embrace the concept that we will not have the role play us. So that's channel two. So we have the lust channel, what's in it for us. We have the role channel. Here we are in the middle of playing a role, whatever it is. And it brings us, the role channel also brings, have you ever had an argument, or the opposite of that, have you ever been in the throes of passion with another individual, or an argument with another individual where you look at each other and just for a moment you acknowledge to the other, wow, this is a tough time, or wow, isn't this wonderful, or isn't this fun? And there's that part of you that sort of steps out of the role of dancing with upset or dancing with passion. Now, those are the first two channels. Now, the third channel speaks to the tribe of 12. And the tribe of 12 would be our astrology. There's spoken of 12 tribes as well in some of the ancient scriptures. And the astrology of ourselves categorizes us all into 12 aspects or 12 tribes. So when you are a Libra, or a Sagittarius, or a Cancer, or a Capricorn, or any of the 12 tribes, you have a certain predisposition. As the ancients are wont to say, you are predisposed or inclined by the stars, by the planets, by the solar system. Now, this is not mere horoscope stuff. This is not mere turn to the horoscope and find out if it's a good day to shop or not. That is what we esoteric astrologists would make reference to as mundane or orthodox astrology, as opposed to esoteric astrology. However, those of you who have given it 5 or 10 minutes of attention will recognize that astrology and the evolution of astrology in the coming of the new age will become incredibly important to our understanding of who we are and how we are defined and how we are inclined. So now, there are the three channels, the three lower channels that we participate in many, many times, often, all the time. And often some people are completely lost on that and lost in those channels. Now let's chat a little about dating.com or findmeamate.com, or how we describe ourselves. Oftentimes I would come back from the golf course and I would sit down and I would chat with my wife and we'd talk about who I golfed with. Well, who did you golf with? Well, I golfed with Tom, Dick, and Harry. Oh, okay. Well, who are they? And I said, they were golfers. Well, what did they do? Well, I never asked what they did. How do you know them then? I don't know them. I just stepped onto the golf course and we golfed. And did you have fun? Yes. Were they good guys? Absolutely. They were wonderful. You can watch and be in a golf game, in a game of golf with somebody and never know a thing about his life and yet know him. You dance with him in a way that's one of the gifts of golf, in my opinion. And there is a certain aspect of women, in my observation, who feel very confused at the fact that you could go to a golf course and golf with people and not know anything about their lives. And so we go to dating.com or match, findmeamatch.com, and we plug into the information box, who am I? Well, who am I starts with, I am a tall, blonde, blue-eyed, athletic female with long hair. So that's your physical. You describe your physical attributes right out of the gate. And then you describe yourself as who and what you think you are in terms of your role and how your role defines you. So I am a teacher. I am a nurse. I am a garbage man. I am a lawyer. I am a police officer or a fireman. So those are the roles you play. And then you cap it off with, I am a Leo. And so everybody goes, oh, I know several Leos, or I know several Aries, or I know several Capricorns. I kind of get that. So that's how you define yourself in the three channels, channels 1, 2, and 3. And so you, as a channel 1, 2, and 3 individual who identify yourself with those channels, you go hunting for somebody who you would view as compatible with those channels. Now, are there other channels? Of course there are. There have to be, because the other channels that exist outside of the realm of the personality. Now, the personality, we say, and the ancients teach us, the personality resides in our lower bodies. And our lower bodies constitute the lower four bodies, if you will. Sometimes it's thought of as three, but the lower four bodies, which would be the physical, the etheric, the astral or emotional, astral and emotional are one and the same, and the mental, the lower mental or the intellect. And it is in these bodies that the personality resides. So what we do when we go to mating.com or findmeamatch.com is we say, I want to find somebody who has a compatible personality to me so that I can use my personality and they can use their personality to hitch up or hook up or whatever it is so we can have a good old time on those three levels. Now, that's not illegitimate. And it's not good or bad. It just is. And it just is how the world resides in the realm of Maya, in the realm of illusion. Are you your personality? It's a big question. So when we ask our question, who are you? In the conventional society, you are your physicality, what you do, and what your horoscope is. So what happens in channel 4 now? So now we're going to reach up, and we're going to reach up to channel 4 and change the channel changer on the side of our head. Okay, so now you look at another, and you gaze at that other person, and you go, my goodness gracious, you're over there, and I'm over here. But when I look into your eyes, I see that you and I are exactly the same. You just have a different package. You just have a different set of attributes and a different set of baggage. You've got a different experience in the lower realms, but you and I are exactly the same. You look into the eyes of another, and that's where we come to the phrase of the eyes are the window to the soul. Now, as soon as you get, and as soon as you acknowledge and recognize that channel 4 exists, it changes your sense of reality. It changes your sense of reality. It does to your sense of who you think you are It does what Einstein did to Newtonian physics. And he came out and he said, Sir Isaac Newton, absolutely brilliant, did wonderful things. He facilitated and moved through and established an answer to almost every question. And he said, of course it's real, but his Newton's laws are only relatively real. And therein lies the magic of the theory of relativity. Now, one of the things that happened in all that is that Newtonian physics was not disproven. It was only rendered relative to higher truths, higher states of being. And so consequently, when you get the Channel 4 exists, it changes the very nature and the very fabric of your identity. It doesn't mean that channels 1, 2, and 3 cease to exist. It means that they now become relative. So you see everybody as being just like you. They merely have a different package. And if you can picture this, I know it's hard to picture this on the radio in a blog talk, but if you can picture a hand that is so large that on the tip of each finger seemingly are an island with trees and palm trees and grass and foliage and the like, and the hand is completely submerged but for the tip of the fingers, Channel 4 gives you an indication that you are the hand and you have chosen to express yourself, if you will, through personalities, through the lower triad, if we will, or the lower quaternary. Everybody is one and the same. We are one. We are one, which brings us to the joke of what do you ask the Buddhist hot dog vendor, and that is make me one with it all, okay? So let's identify as Channel 4 what that does to your sense of being. You now start to see that this individual perhaps chose his packaging in order to facilitate his effective evolution or his schooling, if you will. What's the phrase? You're given lessons in life until you learn them, and then you're given more. And some people are destined to learn their lessons over and over and over again because they just don't pay attention. They don't learn the lesson so they can move on. We are an evolving civilization. We are an evolving aspect of realization. Some would say we are God experiencing himself, or God experiencing itself. So now we see that Channel 4 exists, and we look around at people and we go, how did you get in there? I am over here and you're in there. How interesting. We are one and the same. We just have different packages. And this is what the ancients have taught for eons and eons and eons. Now we reach up to this channel changer on the side of our head and we turn it to channel 5. Well, where does channel 5 reside? Well, channel 5 resides in the recognition that everything you see in another is you looking at yourself, because you now start to see that the water has receded and that you are all connected. You are looking at a manifestation of others who are just like you in different packages. So everything you see in another and like in another, you see and like in yourself. You see in another and dislike in another, you see and dislike in yourself. So those aspects of discontinuity or discontent, you need to take responsibility for. You need to stand in that place. And what is it about that individual that brings me delight or brings me upset? And how is it that I reconcile that with myself? How is it that I can recognize that person as me? I see a mirror everywhere I look. Here's some pretty significant food for thought. Now we come back to the channel changer. We recognize that channels 4 and 5 exist. It changes the very fabric of us. And now we go to the next channel, and that would be channel 6. And channel 6 is we see all is one. We are all one, and the channel changer disappears, and we become one with it all. And this would be the Sanskrit term called nirvana. This would be samadhi. This would be recognizing that you merge into the great consciousness of God. Now, how does this make any difference whatsoever? Well, if you can identify and recognize that channels 4 and 5 exist and park yourself there every now and again, is your capacity to see things with eyes unclouded by longing, where does longing reside? Longing resides in channels 1 and 2. Longing resides in the personality. And part of the fabric of evolution and the fabric of waking up is extricating yourself from identification with your personality. Extricating yourself with identification with your thoughts. And meditation is one of those avenues or methods by which you do extricate yourself from your identification with your body and your thoughts. You are not your thoughts. Now, this comes contrary to some of the things that have been said before by René Descartes, for example, who said, cogito ergo sum, which is Latin for I think, therefore I am. And for a while, the evolution of mankind, the thinking evolution of mankind, is that we identified ourselves with the fact that we could think, and we assumed that animals and plants and minerals could not think. They did not have consciousness. Excuse me. And in fact, cogito ergo sum projects something on us that has been one of those memes, one of those things that lends itself to a bit of hijack. Excuse me for a moment. Now, perhaps it shouldn't have been cogito ergo sum. Perhaps it should be sum cogito, which is Latin for I am and I think. And then it begs the question, if you stop thinking, do you cease to be? Because that's what cogito ergo sum suggests. And that is not the case. When you cease thinking, or you extricate yourself from your thoughts, you don't disappear. You become closer to what we make reference to as the voice of the silence. And it is in that place where you become more aware and you are more able to embrace who you truly are, because your vehicle is but what your automobile is. It is a shell or a sheath, as some would say. It is a vehicle upon which you reside on occasion and travel around on occasion. But it serves you. It serves you. It is your servant. The mind is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. How often do we find ourselves fraught with or overcome with or overwhelmed with thoughts, whatever the thoughts are? Whether they're good or bad is irrelevant, but they are just full in our head, and consequently we can get no peace from them because we are overthinking, overpondering, overworrying whatever is going on in our lives. And that's part of where we come to in terms of the act of meditation, getting quiet, plugging into what we are inspired to do, plugging into a place where we can see another not as their role, but something of a divine nature, of their higher self, their higher space, channels 4 and 5. So now we start to really see how we identify ourselves with these things. And now, can we look upon things with a little more detachment? Can we be in a place, as some say, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And so when you introduce incongruous observations about what's happening on the planet, when you introduce predispositions towards things that many share, mass mind shares. Mass mind has a vested interest to be right. Not only mass mind, most personalities have a vested interest to be right. And so when the police officer pitches up and he says, "You, this is a crime against humanity. You were traveling 62 kilometers an hour in a 50-kilometer zone. He is desperate to be right. And oftentimes, when we plug into that place where we are so vested in being right, we get there too. How oftentimes have you found yourself in an argument where you know full well that you don't have a leg to stand on, yet you are arguing merely to be right? Do you want to be right, or do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right, or do you want to extricate yourself from identification with your lower selves? Do you want to find your true self? Big food for thought. Now let's chat about being able to see what is going around, to be able to see with eyes unclouded by longing, to be able to see and hear clearly, with eyes unveiled, through the veil, lifting the veil. The masters throughout time have often spoken of being able to see things clearly, seeing things outside of the Maya, outside of the glamour. Dwalkul calls this glamour, and it is a world's problem. It is the astral nonsense of things. So when we see Russia and the Crimea and the Ukraine and the U.S. and the various other individual countries that are giving their 2 cents worth of it, wouldn't it be nice to be able to see what is really happening as opposed to what these individuals want us to see? Have we been led down the garden path in order to facilitate others' agendas? It's a distinct possibility, and we would be mindful to view things for what they are, as opposed to whoever it is that is telling us what they are. Because there are often agendas, there are often roles, there are often personalities. Now, if an individual can have a personality, in keeping with the law of correspondence, so can a company. In keeping with the law of correspondence, so can a city, so can a country, so can a banking system, so can an economic system, so can a band of gangsters, so can a band of masters helping the world. And it is that vehicle that facilitates their agenda. Now, when your personality is only attached to the lower realms, you choose to do what you can to feed those lower realms. And this would be not necessarily misguided, but this would be the self-help programs that are meant to empower your personality. And while this isn't necessarily good or bad in and of itself, what we, in terms of this initiative and in this conveyance, what we speak of in terms of retooling is empowering your higher self to utilize an aligned lower self to facilitate who you are and what you're here to do. There are things to be done by you that are done better by you than anybody else on the planet. And how is it that you plug into that in a manner that serves something of a much greater order? A much greater order. And it brings me to a phrase that Helen Keller once put forward, and it is, life is not about self-gratification or empowerment of the personality. It is about aligning yourself with a worthwhile pursuit and giving yourself over to that pursuit. So if you are called to do something of a great fashion, oftentimes my students do have big conversations about, this is much too big for me. It is. Your personality is a wonderful servant. It isn't a master. And when you are feeling too overwhelmed by various tasks at hand, whatever it is that you need to do, whether it's going to school, whether it's paying attention to what's happening in the world, whether it's being the best doctor, lawyer, garbage man, whatever it is, whether being that best in playing that role and knowing it for being a role that you play. Carlos Castaneda calls this the impeccable warrior, being the very best you can at whatever it is that you're doing at the time, always knowing that you're doing it as a result of synthesizing your soul within your personality, a soul-infused personality. You have a vessel that becomes a perfect instrument in the hands of your higher self. And so when we hear of and we are witness to inspired writings, inspired actions, inspired ways of being. This is exhibited by those individuals who have aligned their personality in a manner that creates their offerings in true alignment with their purpose. We are here for a purpose. And the purpose isn't just hanging out and experiencing things. We are here for a purpose in order to facilitate our soul calling. And when we speak to the university students and when we speak to all of our students everywhere, we reiterate the simple mantra, there are things to be done by you that are done better by you than anybody else on the planet. It's waking up to who you are. And that's a very magic place to be, because every day you wake up and you say, this is what I am inspired to do. This is what I am called to do. And all of my waking and sleeping hours, I will facilitate and act in a manner that brings me closer and more able to facilitate my purpose. So now, for a few brief moments, I want to chat about seeing things unfold, seeing things happen on the globe, seeing things happen in a way that we can see them and view them for what they are. And be ever mindful of how others will tell you how to see things, even me. Do not assume for a moment that your own critical nature, your own capacity to be critical of things and discerning of things and discriminating of things is not valid. It is only when you know these things as true that you step into that place of understanding. Believe, we are ending the era of belief, and we are stepping into the era of knowing. And this is what I speak of often. Be in that place where you know. So now, I want to chat a little about the law of cycles. And the law of cycles is as simple as the beating of your heart, as simple as the blink of your eyes, as simple as the breathing of a breath. And when we play the channels again, who is it that blinks your eyes? Who is it that thinks your thoughts? Who is it that pumps your heart? There is something bigger than your personality, something bigger than your physical body. Okay? So now let's chat a little about the law of cycles. Now, the law of cycles, or the law of periodicity, as it's referred to sometimes, comes about when we look at Mother Nature and how Mother Nature has proven itself over and over and over to be incredibly predictable in terms of the confirmation of the law of periodicity. Now, the law of periodicity happens with the tides. The law of periodicity happens with the moon cycles. The law of periodicity happens with the seasons. It would seem a bit odd, and it would seem a bit fretful, if all of a sudden winter was followed by fall, was followed by winter, and we skipped spring and summer altogether, wouldn't it? This would be outside of what we would view as the laws of Mother Nature. And it is in alignment with these laws that we stand in knowing how to act and how to be. Now, I want to chat a little about Earth changes. Oftentimes we chat about economic and fiscal, financial, political changes, but now I want to chat a little about Earth changes. Now I want to speak to statistics and charts showing an acceleration in extreme weather events and geological changes. Now, I want to entertain a place that says losses as a result of those losses incurred by the insurance companies since the 80s, since 1980 to 2013. And I want to picture, if you will, for you, a chart that is ever growing. We are seeing losses that are happening via the world's largest reinsurance company in the world called Munich Re. And it shows that losses are increasing. Now, this chart that is ever increasing and growing does not show all damaging floods and storms, just those that cause losses for the insurance industry. Now, according to those who closely monitor volcanic eruptions, guess what? There's a new all-time record in 2013 with 84 volcanoes erupting versus 82 in 2010. 7 volcanoes in 6 different countries all started erupting within hours of each other. And then there was this minor problem. Scientists have now found new volcano rumblings under Antarctica ice. 1,370 tremors. Okay. What does this say? Well, it talks about the cyclic changes of the planet. And it talks about the use or misuse of the resources on this planet. And it talks about Mother Earth changing things, shifting things. There's a global outbreak of strong earthquakes going on. These will shift things. Okay? According to data coming from a tsunami database, which has records going back to about 2000 BC, so 4,000 years ago, there have been 34 tsunamis with a wave height greater than 20 feet over the last 400 years. 6 of those, or 18%, have occurred since the year 2000. In the 20th century, there was a tsunami with a 20-foot wave height about once every 10 years. In this century, it has happened once every 2 years, resulting in the deaths of 250,000 people, despite the fact that none of these tsunamis struck a major city. Okay. Mother Earth. Things are changing. Things are happening. The Earth itself is evolving. And the evolutionary aspect of Mother Earth is in the premise that can we see these Earth changes? Can we see the changes in economics? Can we see the changes in politics? Can we see the changes in military, the Crimea and the Ukraine? And can we consequently take actions where we are further preparing ourselves for what is happening? None of what is happening is either good nor bad. It just is. And when we qualify it as good or bad, and when we fill ourselves with fear, what we are doing is succumbing to the personality presentations of others and even ourselves, rather than seeing everything is unfolding in according to divine design in the laws of periodicity. This is food for thought. Let us not forget the channels. When you can stand and go, here I am looking through channel 1, and you know that channel 1 exists, but it doesn't only just exist on its own. It is only relative to the other channels. It calls us to be aware and mindful of which channel we are at in any given point in time. Let us watch the earth changes. Let us watch things unfold to facilitate this new coming of age. It is a coming of age of the earth. It is the coming of age of you. It is the coming of age of a new era, the dawning of a golden age, the dawning or coming of the age of Aquarius. And it is a very magic time. And it behooves us to be mindful and be able to discriminate with how all of this is happening and see it for what it is, rather than either what people would hide it from you or people would have you view it differently so that they can control you. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, this is Friday, March 21st, and I bid you adieu, and I will speak with you again next week. Thank you for allowing me to be of service, and thank you for your attention as we move forward in this dawning of a new age.